Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Master plan unveiling is today. The Odessa City Council approved the newest iteration of the city's downtown master plan Tuesday night, and residents will get their chance to see it and ask questions this afternoon. Monica Powell, an urban planner with Kimley Horn, said the company evaluated how far the city has come since the 2016 master plan, and it evaluated the feasibility of the unfinished projects. They put together surveys and met with residents and others over 3 days in September before spending the last 6 months finalizing the plan. During the process, Powell said they discovered residents were satisfied with the city's special events, safety, and traffic levels, but were less pleased with existing shopping and general appearances of downtown and current public spaces. They were unsure about downtown's existing dining options, housing, and how to navigate downtown. The report presented to the council Tuesday night detailed 42 new businesses have been created downtown since 2016 and $295,000 in facade grants and $685,431 in infrastructure grants have been received. It also touts the $30 million conference center and public parking garage and $11 million devoted to the Ector Theater. The report indicates the plan is to transform downtown Odessa into a major destination for residents and visitors with several art, entertainment, and cultural opportunities. They also hope to make Odessa's downtown attractive and safe for pedestrians. The plan was approved by the Tourism Board prior to the council adopting it Tuesday night. Among the highlights, dotting downtown with public art, benches, bike racks, wider sidewalks, and attractive landscaping to include planter beds and trees, turning 2nd and 8th Street into downtown gateways, turning 4th and 6th Street into festive streets that can easily be closed during community events, using signs and a welcome center map to help visitors find historic landmarks, parks, amenities, etc., turning Jackson Avenue between 3rd and 5th Streets into an area filled with restaurants and outdoor dining, creating a bike loop east to west along 3rd and 5th Streets and north to south down Jackson Avenue to Lincoln Avenue, creating more direct access to Noel Heritage Plaza, adopting a marketing and branding strategy, addressing parking issues through parking lots, parking garages, shared parking. The plan also calls upon the city to seek out ways to address the lack of housing downtown, especially for those who work at Medical Center Hospital and attend school at Texas Tech Health Science Center, Permian Basin. The unveiling of the master plan will be held at the Copper Rose Building, 415 North Grant Avenue, 4:30 p.m. to 6 p.m. today. There will be live music, light refreshments, and door prizes. COVID-19 news by the numbers. COVID in the basin. Ector County, 36,796 total cases, 665 deaths. ECISD daily cases, 1 student, 0 staff. Midland County, 36,568 total cases, 472 deaths. Texas, 6,588,651 total cases, 83,962 deaths. U.S. cases, 78,518,045 total confirmed and 936,162 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTP. PTUQ. MCH COVID numbers, Medical Center Hospital daily COVID inpatient numbers as of 8:30 a.m. Wednesday, 24 COVID patients in-house, Med-Surg non-critical 17 COVID patients, critical care 7 COVID patients, 5 unvaccinated, 1 vaccinated, 1 unknown, 5 COVID patients on ventilator, 3 unvaccinated, 1 vaccinated, 1 unknown. Age ranges of COVID-19 patients, 38 years old to 89 years old. COVID patients from outside Ector County, 1 from Abilene, 3 from Fort Stockton, 1 from Hobbs, New Mexico, 1 from Jal, New Mexico, 1 from Kingman, Arizona, 2 from Midland, 1 from Pecos, 1 from Presidio. Free drive-through COVID-19 tests. The City of Odessa Incident Command is partnering with Curative to offer the COVID-19 PCR test drive-through from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at the corner of 2nd Street and Grant Avenue. Insurance information will be requested. If no insurance, test will be free. To book an appointment, visit curative.com. Quick hits. Early voting. Early voting for the joint primary election, March 1st through Friday, will take place at the following locations. Early voting at the Ector County Courthouse Annex, room 104, 1010 East 8th Street, has been scheduled from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. through Friday. Early voting schedule at the branch locations will take place 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. through Friday at Kellis Turner Community Building, 2230 Sycamore Drive, the Globe Theater at Odessa College, 2308 Shakespeare Road, Salinas Community Building, 600 West Clement Street, and MCM Elegante Hotel, Hawaii Ballroom, 5200 East University Boulevard. For sample ballots or more information, call the election office at 432-498-4030 in Odessa or 432-688-4890 in Midland or visit tinyurl.com/3v7zpce2ectorcounty, tinyurl.com/2p84v782midland county, or sos.state.tx.us for the Secretary of State. Free AARP tax aid. AARP is offering free tax assistance to seniors by appointment from through April 12th at the Northside Senior Center, 1225 Adams Avenue. Masks are required. To schedule an appointment, call 432-337-5281. ECISD leaders to sign first class of para to teacher program. Ector County ISD has announced that 6 instructional paraprofessionals have been invited to join the para to teacher opportunity. As part of the ECISD pipeline strategy, the para to teacher opportunity will provide funding for up to 6 instructional paraprofessionals to complete their bachelor's degree, undergo a certification program, and provide additional funding for living expenses, a news release said. ECISD received funding support from the Texas Education Agency as part of the Texas COVID Learning Acceleration Supports, TCLAS. This portion of the funding is specifically designed to grow your own supports. The Grow Your Own GYO program is designed to facilitate increased entry of qualified, diverse candidates into the teaching profession, particularly in rural and small school settings. This particular part of GYO provides supports for paraprofessionals to become certified teachers, the release said. ECISD will hold a signing day for the 6 selected paraprofessionals in the Ector County ISD Administration Building, Boardroom 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. The ceremony will signify the district's commitment to the participants and their commitment to becoming a certified teacher. Landgraf endorsed by Texas State Rifle Association, PAC. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican, Odessa, has been endorsed for re-election to the Texas House of Representatives by the Texas State Rifle Association, TSRA, Political Action Committee, a press release detailed. As state representative, I swore an oath to preserve and protect the U.S. Constitution and the Texas Constitution, Landgraf stated in the press release. I take the oath seriously and have endeavored to take every opportunity to defend the constitutional rights of Texans. As a result, it's an honor to have TSRA's endorsement based on my work to preserve and protect Second Amendment rights here in Texas. TSRA has tens of thousands of members from across the state, including individuals from all walks of life who have had a common goal of protecting the rights of the law-abiding citizens to keep and bear arms. The TSRA Political Action Committee works to educate elected officials, the media, and the general public about issues relating to the freedoms guaranteed by the Second Amendment and the Texas Constitution. Representative Landgraf has fought for the Second Amendment rights of Texans since the moment he first took the oath of office, TSRA Executive Director Diana Greenwood stated in the press release. He's a leader in the Texas House, especially when it comes to the constitutional rights of Texans. TSRA is proud to endorse Representative Landgraf for re-election, knowing fully well he will continue to defend our constitutional right to bear arms in Texas. During the 2021 Texas legislative session, Landgraf supported efforts to expand the Second Amendment rights of law-abiding Texans by co-authoring House Bill 2622 to make Texas a Second Amendment sanctuary state and supported House Bill 1927, also known as Constitutional Carry. Both bills were signed into law by Governor Greg Abbott. I'll continue standing strong for the right of law-abiding Texans to be able to defend themselves and protect their families, Landgraf stated in the press release. Texas now has some of the strongest 2A protections in the nation. I'm proud to live in a state where freedom and personal responsibility are prioritized, and I'll keep working hard to make sure it stays that way. Landgraf, Gray report campaign finances. Gray misses Tuesday filing deadline, faces hefty TEC fines. Incumbent District 81 State Representative Brooks Landgraf and challenger Casey Gray, both of Odessa, will meet in the Republican primary on Tuesday. With no Democrat on the ballot, a primary win will be tantamount to election as Landgraf seeks a fifth 2-year term and Gray angles for the upset. In his Tuesday deadline report to the Texas Ethics Commission for money accepted and spent up to February 19th, Landgraf said he had taken in $296,325 and spent $90,038, while Gray had reported in his last filing January 31st that he had raised $28,351 and spent $14,236. However, the TEC said Gray had missed the 5 p.m. Tuesday deadline, leaving uncertain how much he had raised and spent since January 21st. The penalty for missing most campaign finance deadlines is $500, but state law makes an exception for the pre-election reports that are due 8 days before an election, TEC General Counsel J.R. Johnson told the Odessa American in a Wednesday email from Austin. For those reports, the penalty is $500 for the first day late and $100 for each additional day, up to a maximum of $10,000. Landgraf's expenditures have included $33,861 to the Franklin Creative Company, of Castle Pines, Colorado, $3,513 to Marco Fuentes of Odessa, $1,250 to attorney Kevin Stewart of Austin, $1,375 to Maverick Campaigns of Houston, $23,487 to USAA of San Antonio, $16,332 to the USPS Mail Processing Center in Austin, $38,050 to the Ward County Livestock Show in Monahans, $2,750 to the Winkler County Livestock Association in Kermit, and $1,769 to Inc. Lion Designs of Odessa. Landgraf's top contributors are Trevor Alberg of Austin with $2,500, Beef Political Action Committee Amarillo for $2,000, Arturo Benavides Jr., Laredo, $2,500, Charles Butt, Public Education, PAC, San Antonio, $5,000, Charter Schools Now, PAC, Austin, $5,000, ConocoPhillips Spirit, PAC, Bartlesville, Oklahoma, $1,250, Dusty Colston, Monahans, $5,000, Speaker Dade Phelan Campaign, Austin, $10,000, Exelon PAC, Washington, D.C., $2,000, Tillman Fertitta, Houston, $1,500, John Gallo, Laredo, $2,500, Ted Hogan, Odessa, $5,000, Pat Hogg, Monahans, $5,000, Encore Texas State, PAC, Dallas, $1,500, Pape Dawson Engineers, PAC, San Antonio, $2,500, Carl Sewell, Odessa, $2,500, Sledge Group Austin, $2,000, Texas Diamondback, PAC Midland, $3,000, also Texas Cornerstone Credit Union League, PAC Dallas, $2,500, Texas Oil and Gas Association Good Government Committee, Austin, $5,000, Texas Restaurant Association, PAC Austin, $2,000, Texas Sands, PAC Austin, $3,000, Texas State Farm Agents, PAC Lakeway, $2,500, Texans for Lawsuit Reform, PAC Austin, $22,500, Associated General Contractors of Texas, PAC Austin, $2,500, Chris Boutwell Lubbock, $2,500, Stacy Bryant Odessa, $10,000, Terry Bryant Odessa, $5,000, Rex Chitty Odessa, $2,500, J. Kenneth Ford Midland, $1,250, John Landgraf Odessa, $1,500, James Nelson Odessa, $100, Texas Association of Realtors, PAC, Austin, $5,000, Texas Trial Lawyers Association, PAC, Austin, $2,500, and the Travelers Companies, PAC, Hartford, Connecticut, $2,000. Gray, in a previous report, reported paying $1,446 to Arrow Printing of Odessa, $125 to Facebook of Palo Alto, California, $340 to Finch Media of Midland, $11 to Microsoft of Redmond, Virginia, and $464 to USPS and $11,850 to Vital Signs, both of Odessa. Gray's supporters have included George Cowan of Virginia Beach, Virginia, with $52, Tony Houdeshell, Tom Ball, $250, Dan Kinzer, Odessa, $26, Daniel Markham, Mount Vernon, Washington, $26, Ismael Ortega, San Antonio, $260, and Julie Strupp, Odessa, $260. Gray reported borrowing $20,000 from himself and also a $10,000 donation from Odessa businessman Duck Salisbury. local and state news roundup. Man charged with assaulting girlfriend. An Ector County Sheriff's Office probable cause affidavit detailed a 35-year-old man was arrested, being accused of assaulting his girlfriend. Adam Douglas Curry was charged with assault to family or household members by impeding breathing or circulation, family violence, a third-degree felony. 33-year-old Kendra Lee DeHay reported the assault to ECSO on February 19th, the affidavit stated. DeHay detailed to deputies she was assaulted by her boyfriend Curry, and they have lived together for 6 months. She also stated the assault happened around 9:45 a.m. February 19th at their home located in the unit block of Big Valley Circle. The probable cause affidavit stated that Curry assaulted DeHay, causing bruising to her neck and restricting her airway by strangling her, which nearly rendered her unconscious. Curry was arrested and booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on February 19th, jail records show. He has one bond totaling $5,000 and was still in custody as of Wednesday morning. Man charged with assaulting officers during Steve O show. A 25-year-old man was arrested after police say he assaulted two peace officers during the Bucket List tour featuring a comedy legend Steve O at the Ector Theater. Mason Alexander Moore was charged with two counts of assault on a public servant, third-degree felony, resisting arrest, search or transport, a Class A misdemeanor, and public intoxication, a Class C misdemeanor. The reported assaults happened February 17th at the Ector Theater, and Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit stated. When Officer Legna Alonso arrived, officers had Moore in hand restraints in the foyer of the theater. Once Moore was restrained, Alonso made contact with Sergeant Tommy Jones, who stated that Moore was being escorted out of the theater by management and Jones for recording the show on his cell phone, even though he was asked not to. While walking toward the exit, Moore threw his hands up, changed course, and attempted to turn around and go after some people that may have been laughing about the situation, the affidavit stated. Jones grabbed Moore from behind and both fell to the ground. An officer tried to gain control of Moore and lift him off the ground. Police say Moore became combative. Moore started striking Sergeant Jones, who was in full OPD uniform, in the chest, and off-duty Corporal Nicholas Moore. Mason Moore continued to be uncooperative by placing his hands underneath his body, preventing officers from placing hand restraints, the affidavit stated. Moore was kicking officers and refusing to walk on his own. Moore had to be lifted and carried by several officers to the patrol unit. Moore was transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center and booked on February 18th. Jail records show he had four bonds totaling $62,312 and posted bail on February 18th. Four teens charged in connection to shooting armed robbery. Four teenagers were arrested after police say they were involved in a shooting and robbed a man at gunpoint. Armand Baeza, 18, was charged with two counts of engaging in organized criminal activity, a first-degree felony, and criminal mischief, a state jail felony, while Carl Cochran, 17, was charged with two counts of engaging in organized criminal activity, a first-degree felony. Killian Horton, 18, was charged with two counts of engaging in organized criminal activity, a first-degree felony, and Madison Watkins, 18, was charged with engaging in organized criminal activity, a first-degree felony. In addition to the three recent charges, Baeza also was charged with going off bond for five counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. On February 19th, officers responded to a shots fired call at the Windchase Apartments located at 4100 East 5th Street in Odessa Police Department. Probable cause affidavit stated. Investigation showed the victim, identified as Alex Mendoza, identified a back passenger of a gray Pontiac. The back passenger, identified as Baeza, possibly had a handgun and shot off a round. Mendoza stated she had gotten into an argument with Baeza's girlfriend and that Baeza was calling her phone. Mendoza also told police her mother, identified as Krista Cuellar, had seen Baeza, who was a passenger in a gray vehicle, and that Baeza pointed the gun at Mendoza and shot at her. At 6:22 a.m. on February 19th, police say they were dispatched to the 1300 block of East 8th Street in reference to a robbery. The victim, identified as Alessandro Prigin, stated he was walking north on Allred Avenue from 6th Street. Prigin stated several males had beat him up and taken his wallet and cell phone. Another OPD probable cause affidavit stated, Prigin stated inside the wallet was cash. Prigin also stated the suspects were in a gray vehicle and were last seen driving north on Allred. Investigations show the vehicle was a 2001 gray Pontiac and was being operated by Cochran, the affidavit stated. Officers located the gray Pontiac and conducted a traffic stop in the 500 block of West 48th Street, and the driver was identified as Cochran. Police say Cochran was read his Miranda warning and he waived his rights. Cochran admitted that he and three other teens were inside his vehicle when Baeza fired off a round toward Mendoza. Killian, he said, was sitting in the front passenger seat and Baeza was sitting in the right back passenger seat, accompanied by his girlfriend, who was later identified as Watkins, when the shooting took place, the affidavit detailed. In the robbery affidavit, Cochran told police that he drove Horton and Baeza to a residence located in the area of East 6th Avenue and Allred Avenue. Cochran stated that when they were at the location, Baeza saw an unknown male, Pigeon, that was walking in the street and told Cochran to drive to him. Cochran stated that Baeza and Horton exited the vehicle and Baeza was holding a gun in one hand, the affidavit stated. Cochran stated that both Baeza and Horton approached Pigeon and robbed him at gunpoint. It was later discovered that prints from the vehicle that Cochran was operating belonged to Baeza and Horton. Cochran, Baeza, Horton, and Watkins were each arrested and booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on February 20th, jail records show. Baeza has 8 bonds totaling $777,500. Cochran and Horton each have 2 bonds totaling $150,000, while Watkins has 1 bond totaling $50,000. All 4 are still in custody as of Wednesday afternoon. Midlander pleads guilty to hate crime charges. Washington. The Department of Justice announced Wednesday that Jose Gomez III, 21, of Midland, pleaded guilty to 3 counts of committing a hate crime for attacking an Asian family he believed were responsible for the COVID-19 pandemic because he believed them to be Chinese, a press release detailed. Gomez faced a maximum sentence of life in prison and, for each offense, a $250,000 fine. Documents filed in connection with the plea detail Gomez entered a Sam's Club warehouse in Midland behind an Asian family with a young child on March 14, 2020. Gomez had never seen the family before and believed them to be Chinese. Gomez followed the Asian family in the store for several minutes because he perceived them to be a threat as they were from the country who started spreading this disease around. The press release continued to detail Gomez momentarily left the family to find a serrated steak knife in the store. Gomez bent the blade so that when he held the handle in his fist, the blade rested against his knuckles, sharp edge facing outward. Gomez returned to the Asian family and punched the father, identified by the initials BC, in the face, cutting him. Gomez then left the scene only to retrieve an 8-inch knife from the store. When Gomez returned, he abruptly went after BC's 2 young children, ages 6 and 2 years old, who were seated in the front basket of the shopping cart, the press release stated. Gomez slashed open the face of RC, the then 6-year-old child. The blade entered millimeters from R.C.'s right eye, splitting his right ear and wrapping around to the back of his skull. Gomez then stabbed a Sam's Club employee who tried to intervene to stop Gomez from further assaulting the Asian family. While being held down on the ground, Gomez yelled at the Asian family, "Get out of America." Gomez admitted after his attack that he believed the Asian family were Chinese, and he blamed them for the COVID-19 pandemic. The press release stated, Gomez further admitted he had attempted to kill the six-year-old child. Gomez also admitted he had attacked the store employee because Gomez wanted to kill the six-year-old child, and the store employee was preventing him from doing so. OC Fashion Show, the annual praise and fashion show presented by Odessa College in celebration of Black History Month at 11:30 a.m. today. Fashions are provided by Mary's Fashions. The fashion show will be presented virtually and will be live streamed for the general public at tinyurl.com/2ammm3ub9. Raising Cane's hiring more than 200 crew members for Odessa location. Raising Cane's in Odessa is preparing to open its largest restaurant in Texas at 4001 East 42nd Street on March 29th. The Raising Cane's location in Odessa is looking for more than 200 local crew members for multiple positions ranging from crew to shift managers. This will be the second Raising Cane's location in the Permian Basin and the 183rd in Texas. Applicants can apply online at workatcanes.com or text RCJOBS to 79211. Walk-ins are also welcome daily between 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the meeting space inside of Town Place Suites by Marriott Odessa, located at 4412 Tanglewood Lane. We opened a Cane's in Midland 2 years ago, and it has been a huge success, creating tons of Caniacs in the area. Area leader of restaurants Doug Haley stated in a press release, "So we can't be more excited to give Caniacs in Odessa a Raising Cane's to call their own. We're also thrilled to continue bringing hundreds of great jobs to the area. More local crew members means more hands on deck that are eager to proudly serve our community." Today's obituary for Thursday, February 24th. Gregory Lee Burlingame, Odessa. Gregory Lee Burlingame, 57, of Odessa, passed away on February 21st at Covenant Medical Center in Lubbock, Texas. Gregory was born on October 3, 1964, to Donald and Marilyn Joyce Hendricks Burlingame in Monticello, Minnesota. He is survived by his spouse, Melissa Lowe Burlingame, 2 children, Amber Brooke Rodriguez, husband Jesus, and David Lee Burlingame, wife Olivia, and 5 siblings, Tammy Mitchell, husband Richard, Cindy McDonald, husband Theo, Lori Burlingame, Jeff Burlingame, wife Mary, and Danny Burlingame, wife Kay. He is preceded in death by his parents, Donald Lee Burlingame and Marilyn Joyce Hendricks Burlingame, and 2 siblings, Lisa Burlingame and Mike Burlingame. A viewing will begin at 12 o'clock p.m. February 25th at Life Challenge Church, with funeral service immediately following at 2 p.m. Pastor Dan Smelser officiating. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Laura Janet Cook, Houston. Laura Janet Cook, 81, of Odessa, passed away from this life on Monday, January 3rd, in Pearland, Texas. She was born in Artesia, New Mexico, on Wednesday, July 9th, 1940, to the late Delbert Clarence and Ella Faye Duckworth Stanhope. She married Robert Jean Cook on October 23rd, 1959. Those left to cherish her love and memories are her son, Michael Allen Cook, and daughter Laura Lynn Gardner, and husband Mark, all of Odessa. Janet's sister, Guanita Faye Wedpick of Pearland, Texas, also survives her. Janet's parents and sister, Edith Onetta Skirbond, precede her in death. A memorial service will be held at Tabernacle Baptist Church, 3608 North Uranus Avenue, Odessa, 79764, on Saturday, February 26th at 2 p.m., Pastor Mark McDonald officiating. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West, and condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Carla Jo Parks Dury, Odessa. Carla Dury's love of life did not come to an end with her death. Carla passed away on February 20th at the age of 71, enveloped by the love of her children, who will continue to honor her legacy by living their lives to the fullest. Carla was born November 3, 1950, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to Lewis Parks and Maxine Davenport. Carla is survived by her father, Lewis Parks, daughter, Kim Marshall, and husband, Gary of Gardendale, sons, James Arnold and wife, Mary of Albuquerque, New Mexico, Jay Dury and wife, Brandy, and Kyle Johnson of Odessa, 9 grandchildren and several great-grandchildren. Carla is preceded in death by her husband, Bob Dury, mother, Maxine Parks, and brother, Gary Parks. Visitation will be from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, February 25th, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, February 26th, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home, with Pastor Griffin Jones officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Joan Wynell Morris, Odessa. Joan Wynell Morris, 69, of Odessa, passed away of leukemia on Saturday, February 19th at Medical Center Hospital. Joan was born on November 18th, 1952, in Bessemer, to Al and Robert Ben Morris, Sr., and Annie Albert Mason. She was a beloved aunt, educator, and dear friend. She is preceded in death by her parents, Robert and Annie Morris, and her sister, Robbie Ann Morris. She is survived by her brother, Robert Bob Morris, Jr. of Monahans. She is also survived by many nieces and nephews. She is survived by numerous cousins and many dear friends. A memorial service will be held at 5 p.m. on Friday, February 25th at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel, 1040 South Dixie Boulevard, Odessa. Graveside services for Miss Joan W. Morris cremains will be held at Williams Cemetery in Columbiana, Alabama, at a later date. Services entrusted to Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory. Today's death notices. Jesus Martin Yanez. Jesus Martin Yanez, 91, of Odessa, died Friday, February 18th. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. Friday, February 25th at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at a later date. Father Fernando Bonilla is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Cruz Vasquez. Cruz Vasquez, 71, died Wednesday, February 23rd in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory, Odessa.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, February 19, 2022. Few points. Call to higher selves will benefit city. Midland's heritage is one of caring and is a shining example of Texas. By Patrick Payton, Midland Mayor. Throughout the past 2 years, I have seen the best of Midlanders, from frontline workers to roughnecks keeping our great city and region going during a historic pandemic and downturn, from school teachers to small business owners nurturing the next generation and fighting to keep generations-old businesses open, from firefighters to police officers and to road crews keeping us safe and working through a historic freeze and beyond. From nonprofits to houses of faith, doing all they can to care for the least and most needy among us, ranging from human beings to our pets. I'm leaving so many out, but I'm certain you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's the spirit of West Texas and Midland that one New Yorker asserted makes this place look like America. But recently, a new burden has arisen in my heart that has spurred me to write this article. Over the past several months, I have received countless reports of crimes against people and property in our city. I have heard of the surge in gang activity seeking to prey on our kids. I have heard of far too many lives lost due to traffic accidents. It seems rarely a day goes by that I do not receive some bad news wreaking havoc on our people, our city, and our morality. We are living in trying, challenging, and at times divisive days. But what are we to do? I am so proud to serve with and alongside the city staff and council. I am beyond certain that together the city staff and council will do whatever is necessary to make sure our city that looks like America remains the jewel of West Texas and the shining example of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But what we need in our season of trial and testing is not another ordinance or city plan. What we need is a city on its knees before our Creator, begging for grace, mercy, peace, and perhaps an awakening. With this context of thought in mind, I am taking this opportunity, and perhaps this risk, to call our city to pray for one another, our collective good, our state, and even our nation. What our city needs is beyond ordinances and rules. We are not in need of a new government program or initiative. We are in need of a healthy renewal of our better selves and our souls. I realize that there are those reading this article who might say I am overstepping my role and should just leave the pastoring of the city to the clergy to which I once belonged. I get that, and it might be a fair shot. But in this season, when our economy is picking up and things are getting back to normal, I cannot, as mayor, sit back and watch us lose our moral compass, bright shining example of liberty and freedom, and the American way of life because a city that looks like America does not call on the collective faith that built America to turn us back toward a safer, more godlike city that touches every area of our lives, from family to church to work. Great awakenings and renewals never occur because of a government program or call to action. Great awakenings occur because small, out-of-the-way groups of people heed the words, "If my people will humble themselves and pray." I do not care about your denominational choice or lack thereof, but I do care about the heart and soul of the city, expressed in many different faith and belief traditions that I have observed for nearly 23 years. Our heritage is not just a city that looks like America. Our heritage is a city that cares for America, cares for our neighbor, and longs for the best for all. Let's gather together in our homes, in our churches, and even alone, and beseech our Creator for grace, mercy, peace, and even renewal as we step back up to our role as the shining example of the great state of Texas, a reflection of the values of this great nation, and return to loving our neighbor like ourselves for a brighter future, a safer future, and a blessed future.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, February 22, 2022, Education section. Legacy to induct Wall of Honor members. Legacy High School will induct four new members to the Lee Legacy Wall of Honor as part of the 2022 class. The Wall of Honor recognizes outstanding former students, faculty, staff, and other individuals who have made a significant contribution to the school. This year's inductees are Stan Van Hooser. Van Hooser is a 1972 graduate of Lee High School who has spent 28 years in education. He taught at his alma mater from 1996 to 2000 and served as principal from 2015 to 2020. He was named Region 18 Principal of the Year in 2019 and was the 2018 recipient of the J.C. Gotcher Rebel for Life Award, an honor presented annually by the Rebel football team. Van Hooser currently serves as Executive Director of State and Federal Programs at MISD. Colonel Kent D. Williams. Williams is a 1972 graduate of Leak High School, a decorated combat pilot. He retired in 2007 after serving more than 30 years in the Air Force. Williams' career as a pilot began at Lee in 1972 when he took the private pilot ground school class as an elective, after which he took the FAA's private pilot written exam. He went on to participate in Air Force ROTC in Angelo State, where he was commissioned as a second lieutenant. Williams' long military career includes instructing fighter pilots here and abroad, advising top military leadership at the Pentagon, leading combat missions in Kosovo, and serving as dean of the Air War College at Air University. John Parchman. Parchman served as the Rebels' head football coach from 1995 to 2005, leading the squad during its three consecutive Class 5A state titles in 98, 99, and 2000. He also served as assistant coach from 1989 to 1992. He's a four-time District 4-5A Coach of the Year and was named USA Today Coach of the Year in 1999. Parchman served on the Texas High School Coaching Association Board of Directors from 1997 to 2000 and in 2020 was elected to the THSCA Hall of Fame. William Spike Dykes served as head football coach from 1980 to 1983 and guided the Rebels to the Class 5A state final in his final season. He would go on to coach the Texas Tech Red Raiders from 1986 to 1999. Dykes was inducted into the THSCA Hall of Honor in 1991 and the Texas Sports Hall of Fame in 2007. He passed away in 2017 at the age of 79. Prerequisites for consideration include the candidate must either be an LHS graduate, have served as an LHS faculty or staff member, or have made a significant contribution to the quality of the school. Alumni candidate must have graduated 15 years prior to nomination, must be worthy of emulation by current LHS students, must have a significant contribution to society or a substantial professional accomplishment. LHS inducted its first Wall of Honor class in 2010. The class of 2022 raises the number of honorees to 35. Inductees are chosen by a committee made up of the principal, community members, staff, alumni, and a student representative. Honorees will be recognized during the LHS baseball game against rival Midland High. The game is set for 7 p.m. March 3rd at Momentum Ballpark. An induction ceremony will take place at 10 a.m. March 4th at the LHS Library. There's a way to get retired teachers back in the classroom. A commentary by Michelle Harmon. Demand for teachers is at its highest level, and school districts cannot fill the jobs. Districts also need experienced teachers. Why not try and hire more retired teachers to work full-time? It is expensive, and the taxpayer will indirectly pay the surcharge, which is defined as a tax to the teacher retirement system of Texas by way of a surcharge penalty tax assessed to school districts for hiring back each retired educator. Are you confused yet? The rules are very complicated and seem to change without notice, as they did during one of the multiple Texas legislative sessions in 2021. The current costs for school districts and public universities to rehire a TRS retired educator are much higher than hiring a beginning teacher, not only because the base pay is lower for a beginning teacher, but because of the surcharge the school districts must return to TRS. Is this starting to sound like another Robin Hood? The taxpayers are paying these surcharges. The two largest employers in Ector County and Midland County are the school districts that struggle to be fully staffed. Both school districts have learned to be flexible by taking advantage of various programs and grants to provide them the ability to hire degreed but not certified educators while the new teachers are getting their certification. Retired educators returning to work would be a wealth of knowledge and experience to improve student outcomes and mentor new teachers. We need to get retired educators back. Many have had a change of circumstance or have found that they cannot live on their retirement checks. Inflation is at a 40-year high, 7.5%. The current return to work penalty is a $15.75% 15.75% surcharge on the gross salary plus a $535 per month surcharge on medical coverage. If the educator has 25 years of experience and makes $75,000 per year, the return to work penalty is $11,812 per year per surcharge on a 12-month employee, plus a medical cover surcharge of $6,420. On a 10-month employee, typically a teacher, the districts would pay the surcharge for 10 months. Suppose a retiree returns to work and is over 65. In that case, they will be personally paying for Medicare tax from the gross pay in the school district, plus their standard Medicare fees to Medicare, plus the TRS Medicare supplemental fee paid to TRS from their retirement check. Additionally, via our tax dollars, the school district is paying another $535 per month for the medical surcharge on the retiree to TRS. Would the financial surcharge be better spent in our local educators' pockets? School districts also need substitutes, so a retired educator can be hired as substitute, but not in a vacant teaching position for more than a specified number of days. Substitutes usually make around $100 per day and pay taxes out of the gross. The number of retirees substituting has dropped with COVID. Is that a surprise? The state of Texas does allow school districts to hire retired educators without the financial penalties for the next couple of years if they are solely paid from federal dollars to address COVID-related gaps. There is also no penalty for educators that retired in 2004 or before. How many of those are still around? Oh, what a tangled web we weave. The state's system to rehire retired educators on a temporary or permanent basis is very complicated and confusing at best. Overall, people want more pay and benefits, not less, to remain or return to work. In the non-governmental world of work, the good news is that the IRS has altered its rules regarding hiring retired staff without penalty to the retiree or the company. TRS and the Texas legislature need to catch up. With the tremendous shortage of teachers in Texas, will TRS change its rules?
Definitive therapy reasonable for this patient. Dear Dr. Roach, what is the end game of hyperthyroidism? I am a 52-year-old female diagnosed in September 2020 with hyperthyroidism due to Graves' disease. My endocrinologist started me on 10 milligrams of methimazole and 100 milligrams of metoprolol daily. My heart rate was above 100 beats per minute. I have blood work done quarterly. My thyroid-related results fluctuate, so my doctor has me either go up to 15 micrograms of methimazole or back down to 10 micrograms accordingly. The last time I had blood work, all the values were low again, which I suspected because I was feeling like a zombie again. But with added double vision, not fun. I am under the impression that this up and down business is how it goes, in hopes that hyperthyroidism goes into remission by the end of the second year of taking methimazole, because that drug can negatively affect the liver. If it does not, surgery will be recommended to remove the thyroid, and I'd have to have a replacement hormone for the rest of my life. I am feeling unwell on 15 micrograms, and the double vision is frustrating. I have not seen an ophthalmologist. I would like to get the thyroid removed and be done with it so I can feel normal again. Are there other options I am not aware of? AC. Answer. The thyroid regulates virtually every system in the body, so abnormal thyroid levels can have different possible effects. High thyroid levels from any cause present problems, but Graves' disease adds an additional complication. In Graves' disease, antibodies stimulate the thyroid to make excess hormone, and they can also cause a unique eye condition.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, February 24th. Late brother's dying wish becomes one-sided effort. Dear Abby, I am one of six adult siblings. Our youngest brother, Clark, died of cancer 5 years ago. He was my best friend. As kids, we did everything together, and we remained close as we got older. As he was dying, Clark asked me to keep his wife Liz and his family in the family. I have tried my best. Every year, I have a large family Christmas party. Liz and her children attend and seem to have a good time. I call or text her monthly, but I rarely receive a reply. She did text me, "Happy birthday." I was okay with this until I heard from my nephew, Clark's son, that there was a memorial service for him. When I asked him who was there, he said, "Everybody." It really hurt because I wasn't informed, nor were any of my siblings. I want to respect Clark's wishes, but even before this, Liz didn't seem to respect my nuclear family. I don't know what to do going forward because I have such sad and angry feelings over not being invited to his memorial. Signed, Conflicted Sis in the East. Dear Sis, please accept my sympathy for the loss of your brother. What you should do is call your former sister-in-law and ask her why you and your siblings were excluded from the memorial, which is a shocking oversight. Then, if her apology is not satisfactory, consider yourself relieved of that deathbed promise, which clearly hasn't been appreciated. Dear Abby, I was recently in a restaurant with a friend who is deaf. I can hear. We were using American Sign Language to communicate. A group walked past us, saw we were using sign language, and assumed neither of us could hear. One of them told her friends we were deaf and dumb. When the server came to my table to take our order and they realized I could hear, they were visibly surprised. The speaker did not appear to be embarrassed by what she had said. The woman's back was turned to my friend, so my friend was unaware of it. Thank heavens, because my friend can read lips. I didn't say anything at the time and let it go. Should I have? I didn't because their table was near ours, and I was afraid the woman would have gotten ruder and made the whole dining experience bad. Should I have said something to the manager or server and sat at another table? If the manager had said something to her, I doubt she would have admitted what she said. Signed, Not Right in Ohio. Dear Not Right, you were right not to challenge the woman who said that. If she wasn't embarrassed when it turned out you could hear clearly, little you could say would have shamed her. There was nothing the restaurant manager could do about this woman's breach of etiquette. You, however, could have asked to change your table if you were no longer comfortable seated next to that party.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.